Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's Heart 1032, available on the web at heart1032.com.au.
Okay, did God create the brain, or does the brain create God? Big question. And you'll find people of faith saying former. You'll say people of science often quote the latter. Well, neuroscientist Dr. Mario Beauregard decided to find out. He did some very interesting research, and he joins us now from Canada. Dr. Beauregard, welcome to Open House.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
When did you first realize that you wanted to research this kind of thing, spiritual experiences in the brain?
Well, as a matter of fact, very early. When I was a child, I've had several spiritual experiences when I was younger, and I started to think about relationship between mind and brain and the soul when I was about 8 years old. And I decided then to become later on a scientist, a neuroscientist, to investigate these questions. And when I became a neuroscientist about 15 years ago, we didn't necessarily have access to all the neuroimaging technology that we have today. So I had to wait to conduct these experiments. But recently, performing neuroimaging technologies have become accessible. Also, there's another important factor. About 5 years ago, the John Templeton Foundation in the United States created a research program about the scientific basis of spirituality. Mm-hmm. So I heard about this program, and I decided to apply to investigate neural correlates of spiritual experiences in Carmelite nuns. But the interest has been there for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that research then with those Carmelite nuns. Before we go any further, though, how do you actually examine what is going on in someone's brain? Talk about the technology that you have used to track this.
Yeah, so we use two different techniques. The first technique is called quantitative EEG for electroencephalography. And this technique allows us to record electrical activity in the brain. So with this kind of technique, you put a cap containing a number of electrodes at the surface of the scalp, and you record electrical activity coming from various regions in the brain. And it's possible now with very sophisticated software tools to detect the origin of the signals that are recorded on the scalp. So that was the first technique. The other technique is called functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI, and it's a very powerful technique. Basically, it's a scanner, and it allows us to detect very precisely and in 3D, three dimension, the brain regions that are activated or deactivated during various kinds of tasks. And so these were the two techniques that we used for our project.
Okay, so you researched these Carmelite nuns by studying them while they were, what, praying and meditating?
Well, before we started recording brain activity, they were effectively praying, and the goal was to measure what's going on in the brain during a so-called mystical state. So the within the Christian tradition, it refers to a sense of communion with God, essentially. Mm. So we wanted to capture the electrical and metabolic activity in the brain during such a mystical state.
Okay, and just to clarify, is that different then from when they were praying, as in expressing requests to God? Was that a different kind of brain activity?
Well, according to their terminology, more related to contemplation.
Yeah,
so it's a kind of meditative state, if you will.
Yeah, but focusing on God through Christ.
Okay,
exactly. Now what did you find when they were in this state? Give us an idea of what your research uncovered.
Yeah, we tested a specific hypothesis about so-called God module or God spot in the brain, located in a region that is called the temporal lobe. So about 30 years ago, a few neurologists realized that when there's an epileptic seizure located within this temporal lobe region, sometimes the patients will report having religious spiritual experiences. It does happen rarely, but still, it happens. And based on these clinical observations, these neurologists proposed that there was a kind of God spot or God module, as they said, in the temporal lobe. So we wanted to test this hypothesis, and for sure the temporal lobe was activated in the nuns, but there were also many other regions activated, and these regions are normally involved with functions such as self-awareness, also positive emotion, and also what we call body representation. Or body schema. It's the representation of the physical body within space. So these results make sense because during the so-called mystical state, there was a marked alteration in terms of self-awareness. The experience was also very positive emotionally, and there was also a marked alteration in terms of body representation within space. The nuns were actually losing contact with their physical body, and so it was translated in terms of changes of brain activity in very specific regions associated with these functions.
Dr. Mario Beauregard is our guest on Open House tonight. We'll podcast this via the openhouse.net.au blog site. We're talking about his book, The Spiritual Brain. You're reading all of this electronic activity, I guess, all this activity happening in the brain while these nuns are in the state of contemplation. Of course, some would say, okay, well, that's just simply a psychological effect. They're thinking nice thoughts, and so it's all contained in the brain, which I guess gets back to that big question. Does God create the brain, or did the brain create God, in the sense of we just imagined God?
Well, in the book, I'm discussing a very interesting case of a near-death experiencer called Pam Reynolds. And this woman, about 15 years ago, was suffering from a major aneurysm at the base of the brain, of her brain, and in a region that controls the heart rhythm and also breathing. So it was a very critical condition, and she was threatened to die soon. And she heard of a neurosurgeon, Dr. Robert Spedler, in Phoenix, Arizona. And Spedler had devised a surgical procedure called standstill. In the standstill procedure, the heart is stopped, and the blood is totally drained from the head, and the body temperature is decreased to about 58 degrees Fahrenheit. And so, essentially, the person is clinically dead for a certain period of time. So, in her case, she was clinically dead for about 60 minutes. And so, during that kind of state, there's no tension in terms of the blood system. So, it's easier to remove these aneurysms, these big aneurysms. And what's fascinating is that even though she didn't have any brain activity, because whenever the heart is stopped, between 10 and 15 seconds after that, usually the EEG, which measures electrical activity, will become totally flat. This means that the brain is not functioning anymore. In that situation, she, at a certain point during the clinical procedure, she had the impression of leaving her physical body and floating over her physical body, and she's been able to report very accurately dialogues between the neurosurgeon and the nurses, and also the cardiologist who was there. And she's also been able to describe very precisely surgical instruments that were used during the surgical procedure. And at a certain point during her experience, she had the impression of traveling along a tunnel. And at the end of this tunnel, she met with deceased relatives. And during the last phase of her experience, she met with a beautiful being of light, and she was totally transformed by this experience, transformed psychologically and also spiritually. And it's the first case that we have where we know for sure that there's no brain activity during a cardiac arrest, and yet the person is able to report veridical information concerning the surroundings. This case, and there are also other cases now, strongly suggest that mind, consciousness, and also spiritual experiences are possible even when the brain is not functioning anymore.
Hmm. Dr. Beauregard, what has been the response to your findings from your colleagues within the neuroscience arena?
Well, it's very polarized. So one thing that is important to see here is that for current neuroscience, the central dogma is that the mind is what the brain does. And so it's a very materialistic outlook. And for this view, spiritual experiences are delusions created by a misfiring or dysfunctional brain. Mm. So that's the view shared by most of my colleagues. However, there's a growing number of younger neuroscientists who are more open-minded regarding non-materialistic approach to the mind-brain question and also to spirituality and spiritual experiences. But so it depends to whom you're talking with.
Yeah. Dr. Mario Beauregard is our guest on Open House. Theopenhouse.net.au will carry the podcast from Tuesday. What I want to know, though, is that, of course, many people can say that they've had a spiritual experience. In fact, many people who have suffered from mental illness or schizophrenia or psychosis will talk about voices and will talk about spiritual experiences. Right. How do you differ between what we could term a legitimate, actual true spiritual experience from outside of the body as opposed to something that is a result of the mind misfiring somehow?
Well, the main difference is at psychological level, so in terms of long-term consequences. So for psychosis, for instance, you will find hallucinations and delusions. It's very characteristic of psychotic states. But these experiences, most of the time, are very negative. So they will lead to very negative long-term effects. And regarding spiritual experiences, it's exactly the opposite pattern. So there's an increasing amount of studies now showing a positive relationship between spirituality and spiritual experiences and the functioning of the body, the physical body, especially regarding the immune system, the endocrine system. And there's also positive correlation with mental health. So the people reporting spiritual experiences score higher on well-being scales, for instance.
Right.
They are more compassionate. They have different attitudes and behavior toward other human beings. So, they are more empathetic and they're more altruistic. So the long-term effects and the consequences seem to be very different.
Mm. Have you done any research or are you planning to do any research on other forms of spirituality in the sense of you're talking about these Carmelite nuns were in a state of contemplation. What about, say, people who are actively praying, actually requesting things from God or maybe worshipping or singing songs or some of those other kinds of acts of devotion?
Well, we were interested to pursue this line of investigation and to examine what's going on in the brain during various states and with different populations using different approaches. And regarding this, there's a lot of interesting work done by Andrew Newberg in the United States. So he has already examined the neural correlates of prayer in Franciscan nuns. And there's another lab led by Dr. Richard Davidson in Wisconsin, United States, and they are investigating what's going on in the brain of Buddhist monks with the help of the Dalai Lama. But as for us, we plan to keep doing these kind of studies and to examine various type of contemplation, for instance, in different people.
And so has the research out of the Buddhist monks or anything like that been similar to what you found with the Carmelite nuns? I just want to know whether the God that's being prayed to or the God that's being contemplated makes any difference.
Yeah, well, in these studies, the monks were focusing on their breathing. And so it was more of an attentional task. So it's very different than what we did. And you have the region of the brain in the frontal lobe, the most anterior portion of the brain, which is called the anterior cingulate cortex. And this region plays a key role in various attentional processes. So they saw activation in this region. Whereas in our case, the task was totally, and the state was totally different because right. there was a, we have to say here that in Buddhism, there's no concept of divinity and yeah. connection with the divine. So it's very different from a subjective point of view.
Yes, okay. So after all this very interesting research, could you say that you've proven the existence of God, or would you not go that far?
No, in my view, this question is way beyond neuroscience and science in general. So we simply by regarding, by examining electrical or chemical activity in the brain, of course, it's possible to say that something is going on, but we cannot prove or disprove the existence of God by doing this kind of investigation.
Well, it's fascinating to talk to you, and thanks for your time on this.
Thanks to you.
Dr. Mario Beauregard, a neuroscientist, and the findings of what we've been talking about there have actually been written up in this book called The Spiritual Brain, A Neuroscientist's Case for the Existence of the Soul. It's published through Harper One.
We hope you enjoyed this Heart 1032 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit heart1032.com.au.